Odyssey celebrates Mother's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
How sweet it is. Wednesday afternoon, and we've got an exciting day of talk radio planned, because that's what we plan every day. Well, yeah, it doesn't always work out that way, but it's always planned that way. So what are you going to do? Is your mic still on the talkback? No? I'm for some reason getting really loud. Anyway, State Senator Rob Sampson is here from Wolcott, and it's always exciting to check in with Rob and to find out what's happening at the state capitol, because that's scary stuff. Rob is from Wolcott. Thanks for being here, Rob.
Good afternoon, Todd. I'll try not to disappoint and add to the exciting plan for afternoon talk radio.
Well, you can't. You are the keystone of it, I guess, is the word. So the pressure is on. Tell us what's going on. What are the pieces of legislation that concern you the most and thus should concern us?
Oh, there is a laundry list, as usual, of very toxic legislation making its way through the General Assembly. But I guess the thing I would focus on right now is that we have a real chance to actually do something to address our election law in the state. And unfortunately, the Democrats just are completely uninterested in addressing the problem. The committee process is more or less wrapping up in the various committees. Basically, you know how the system works. You know, the individual bills are proposed, they go through public hearings, and then the committees debate and vote on them. And then there's a little lull in between, and then we go to the House and Senate for final passage. So the committees are wrapping up, and yesterday was the final day for the Elections Committee. And the Democrats, after, you know, bugging them literally for years to address the problems with our elections that, the Bridgeport scandal kind of highlighted, which is all about absentee ballots. They came up with a bill that addressed the issue in the most minimalistic way possible, basically almost non-existent, and that is that they want to put cameras on drop boxes, which, you know, you can say that might be a step in the right direction. I mean, it's debatable. I mean, we had cameras on drop boxes in the three subsequent Bridgeport elections. It didn't seem to do much. You know, the same terrible activities continued. So I tried yesterday to offer a series of amendments that would actually solve the problem, and we can talk about those if you like.
Well, one of the issues that appeared with the video cameras was that had it not been for somebody leaking those videos to the Gomes campaign in Bridgeport and those becoming public, that evidence wouldn't have been known, because there was hundreds of hours of video that you had to look at to find that malfeasance was going on. So what would be the process that would bring that video to light, even if there was cheating that was plain as day for the cameras?
Right. Well, the bill that they have mandates that the 169 towns across the state, wherever they have drop boxes, will have to keep 24-hour video surveillance. And they've got to deliver that upon request to any citizen within 5 days. I think the only other requirement would be that they have to maintain that footage for at least a year. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that it's a terrible idea, although it's going to be an expense to towns that they haven't obviously considered before, and it's going to be passed on to taxpayers. And my concern is that I don't think it really addresses the problem, because the issue has nothing to do really with the drop boxes, other than, you know, that is one of the means by which somebody like Wanda or someone like that, who is, you know, abusing the absentee ballot, you know, procurement process, that might be their final destination. But they could just as easily put those ballots into a U.S. postal mailbox, or even drop them off at the town clerk's office. I mean, it's not really going to make that much difference. And I think putting the cameras on the drop boxes is simply going to encourage people to choose one of the other means. It's not going to stop the activity. And I would like to address the real problem, which is that our absentee ballot system, our mail-in voting system in Connecticut has unbelievable holes in the process.
Well, so talk about that a little bit, because is it that automatically, if you have early voting, if you've taken the ballot out of the domain of the officials who run elections, if it's no longer, the custody is no longer continuously in the space controlled by the officials, then you're opening and asking for, it seems to me, you're opening the process to hanky-panky, aren't you?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what they've done. I mean, you know, we've always had absentee voting in the state of Connecticut, but it was limited. It was limited to people that had a legitimate need and excuse to vote by absentee, because they legitimately could not appear at the polls. But that's changed dramatically over the years. And, you know, the pandemic was the opening that the Democrats needed to effectively create lawful ballot harvesting. And that's what's transpired. And we're
define that term, please, ballot harvesting.
Well, I mean, ballot harvesting is the system by which ballot applications are obtained and distributed to either real people or non-real people, and then completed by either real people or non-real people, and then returned back to the town. And then the ballot is distributed to them, and then either real or non-real people return those ballots. And, you know, ballot harvesting it can be lawful as long as everybody involved is on the up and up, and those ballot applications are being completed by the legitimate person. They're filling them out for their purposes, and the same thing with the ballots. Or it can be a situation where people are simply obtaining these applications and ballots and completing them on behalf of others without their knowledge. And that's the danger of all of that.
We're talking to State Senator Rob Sampson, and we're discussing a piece of legislation designed to clean up the process. Well, or designed not to clean up the process. This was written by Democrats without Republican input, or what?
Right. Well, I mean, there was some Republican input. I serve on the committee, and I certainly have been screaming at the top of my lungs for years now about how we don't need the drop boxes. And then I was at one time advocating that if you're going to have drop boxes, then you should have cameras on them. So I haven't really backed away from that position. But what I'm concerned about, Todd, is that, you know, this is the Democrats' answer to what's happening in Bridgeport. And I just want to make sure that the people of Connecticut understand that that is just, you know, a shell game. That's smoke and mirrors. It's not going to address the problem. The real solution is, number one, to fix our voter rolls across the state by having proper audits of Election Day registration, proper audits of absentee ballots. These are situations where people register to vote and then they're able to vote, but then the registration is sent to their home and then it's returned in the mail. And that should, you know, raise a red flag, you know, to the registrar. Say, oh, wait, maybe that wasn't a real person. Or maybe that person's registered in a different address or something like that. We have no auditing process. We do very little to maintain our voter rolls. We saw during the pandemic that, you know, people were receiving, you know, stacks of ballot applications to their home for the people that used to live at that address, for example. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, when you start to do that, some people are going to fill those things out. People are going to fill them out for their kids that are away at school or for their elderly parents. And that's happening across the state. Now, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, what the significance of that is. I don't know if it's, you know, a handful of ballots here or there, or it's in the tens or hundreds or even thousands, but it is happening. And sometimes elections are decided by as little as one vote. So it does matter. So step one is fix the voter rolls. Step two is to stop with the unsolicited mailing of those ballot applications. Go back to a system that requires the actual voter to request their ballot application. That would fix a lot of this mess. And then ultimately put some penalties in place if people are caught interfering with the process. You know, those three things, I think, would go a long way to solving the problem. But the Democrats have no interest. They're trying to convince the public that they've actually attacked this issue and tackled the issue with the cameras on drop boxes. And like I said, not a terrible idea, but also not going to fix the problem.
But the my impression is that the purpose of having absentee balloting or early voting, the purpose of it is to loosen up the custody issues that have to do with ballots to create the possibility to more easily cheat. Looking at what happened in Bridgeport and looking at how glibly it was treated by Governor Lamont and other Democratic, high-ranking Democratic elected officials who ended up endorsing the cheaters. Team Cheat was the Ganim team in Bridgeport. And they went along with the whole thing and then endorsed the guy for re-election. So that, to me, confirms what seemed obvious already, which was the purpose of this loose custody system of voting was to create holes they could drive a truck through. And they had the trucks all packed and gassed up and ready to go.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you at any of that, Todd. I think that the law changes that have gone into effect over the last decade, expanding access to voting in the state of Connecticut, are all designed to be used for rigging the system, make it easier to cheat, and allowing Democrats who have a much more significant ground game, particularly in the cities, to exploit those holes in the process. I know that's a bold claim. You're not afraid to make it, and neither am I, because it's quite obvious to me. And the Bridgeport video, I think, was just the proof, you know, that this is actually happening, so that they could no longer deny it. But now we're in a situation where the Democrats are trying to pretend that they're addressing this problem and they're going to fix it with these cameras. And it's just so frustrating to me that some people are actually going to buy into that and say, look, they solved the problem, Samson. Why are you still complaining? Because I know full well that's not going to make any difference. I mean, for example, I don't think anyone was fined or charged. Certainly no one's going to serve any jail time for what happened in Bridgeport. And I think that's because I don't think, even though that video footage is conclusive from a standpoint that something bad is happening, I don't know that you can actually get to the point of convicting someone for a crime, because it's hard to say exactly what Wanda or anyone else was actually depositing into the boxes.
No,
so
but
that type of thing is going to continue.
Well, they did empty the boxes afterwards, so they knew what was in there, and they would know if she was putting something, or if anyone was putting something other, like if a birthday cake was going in there, we would know, because they would have seen it when they opened up the box, right? There were ballots in there, presumably. And this is what you would have an investigation to find out. Investigations put people under oath and get their testimony, and they look for documents to confirm things. But the fact that there is video, it is nice, but it doesn't give anybody a lot to go on who's being cheated. If you're going up against Mayor Ganim trying to unseat him in Bridgeport, and the cheating is going on as it has been in recent election cycles, apparently, because this is Democrats suing Democrats over their cheating. And presumably Mr. Gomes, who used to work for years for Mayor Ganim, when he was running for office, he understood what the cheating methodology is that Ganim uses, and he was ready for it. And that's why he had somebody lined up to dump the tape for him into his hands so that he could watch the tape. And he had somebody sit and watch all those hours of tape, and they found the cheating going on. They found the evidence of it. So how about a little investigation? Nobody cares in the power structure, and I think that's what you're trying to address.
Absolutely. Yes. No, there's another bill that they have where, of course, the Democrat solution is to create some top-down bureaucratic oversight committee to watch, you know, the city of Bridgeport or any other city that apparently, well, you know, would have some sort of election day irregularities. And that's fine, I suppose, except that's not the solution either. I mean, we're creating a bunch of political animals to watch some other political animals in another city, I don't think is the solution. What you need is an actual, investigation and someone who has the authority to actually charge people and convict people of crimes when they're caught. And that's what's lacking from this whole system. There's very little in the way of deterrent, and there's a million, as you mentioned, holes in the system big enough to drive a truck through. And that's what I'm trying to address.
Yes, because structurally, people can say after the fact, oh, well, you're just, you're making a big thing out of a small thing and you can't fix all the cheating. Boys will be boys. Well, if boys will be boys, you want to have a system that's well designed so that if they want to try to jump over the fence, there's some barbed wire there that might catch them and dissuade them from wanting to try to jump over again. And that's what you're saying, is that the system should be a tight one, not one that's been loosened deliberately in order to make cheating easier. And from what I've learned from people I've talked to in the cities, the way it works is they want to be able to walk. They build relationship with people who live in dense areas of housing, like projects or apartment buildings, and they'll walk through at certain times a year and give gifts to voters, and they get to know their citizens, and then they cultivate those relationships. And then when they're walking around with a gift come election time, they ask for people to sign a ballot that's already been made out or some scam like that, and they collect ballots. And it's a pretty simple kind of methodology that seems obvious now that we have proof of cheating in Bridgeport and we have proof of the Democrats' lack of interest in doing anything about it.
Right. And I think, part of the problem is that, this has been going on for decades. The only thing is it was much more limited in the past because the only people that could legitimately vote by absentee ballot were people that, had an excuse. They're indigent or, bedridden, or they can't get out of their house, or they're elderly in some way. They can't make it to the polls. That's the only way you could, use an absentee ballot. So in those cases, that limited the pool of potential voters that you could fabricate if necessary. But nowadays, since they've expanded the definitions of sickness and who's actually eligible, so that anyone and everyone is eligible to vote by absentee, now you've opened the floodgates. So we went from having, a very, very small percentage of ballots cast by absentee in an election. 2 or 3% is what it used to be pre-pandemic. And now we're talking about anywhere from, 10 to 30%. During the pandemic, it was even more than that. And I think given the right circumstances in a controversial presidential election, something like that, mm-hmm. I think you could see huge numbers again. And that is the problem with the system, is that everyone knows, even the Democrats, full well that system is not tight enough. It's not tight enough. You can't police it. And they exploit that and for their own benefit. And as you pointed out, the only time it really becomes an issue for them is when it's a Democrat on Democrat primary. And then we hear about it. But, even the people that are involved in those Democrat on Democrat primaries that end up disgruntled about the results. And I'm speaking of Senator Marilyn Moore, who was Ganim's last opponent.
Previous to this cycle.
Yeah, that's right. And she, the same thing happened to her that happened to Gomes, presumably. And she made a big issue out of it and complained. But as she had the opportunity to vote on it in the state Senate last year, when I offered amendments during the special session, she voted against the amendments.
Yeah. And that's what we call a good soldier, right? We're talking to State Senator Rob Sampson. Rob, we've got just 2 minutes left. Anything else you want to cover, or anything else you want us to know about this election law that is being considered now?
Yeah, well, we're like I said, we're wrapping up the committees, and there are many, many bad bills that are have passed out of committee, and you'll start to see them showing up in the House and Senate for crucial votes. You've probably talked about a number of them on the air, but you can be certain that I'll be up here, doing my best to stop those things and trying to keep you and your listeners informed about the things that are coming. But we've got to stay vigilant because the Democrats are certainly not slowing down because it's an election year.
Well, you want to give us a quick tease on one in 60 seconds? Is there a standout one for you?
There's a few of them. There's a bill that would actually put a DEI director in every state agency. And that person would actually be charged with comparing any bit of policy decision making that the commissioner of that agency is making with the equity standard that they're developing. And of course, this is going to cost a fortune to taxpayers. I mean, these folks typically make in the 150 to 200K yes. range, and multiply that times 24 state agencies. I mean, now you're talking millions and millions of taxpayer dollars being wasted on this. And obviously, these folks are up to what I consider to be no good. They're going to mm-hmm. use race-based and gender-based discrimination in their policymaking, and they can try and spin it any way they want, but that's what it is. You've got that. You have constitutional amendments, two constitutional amendments pending, one that would effectively enshrine abortion and even gender-affirming care as protected in Connecticut under our constitutional law, the same as we have equal protection for race and gender currently. Crazy stuff. And they also have another amendment that is going to enshrine environmental protection into our Constitution. And, you know, that sounds really nice on the surface, but ultimately that is going to be a major interference with individual property rights, effectively giving the state the
control over your property.
Over your property, your soil, yeah. your air.
These and people just can't be trusted, Rob Sampson. State Senator Rob Sampson. Control. Wolcott, Republican, thank you for being here. It's great to hear from you, and let's do it again soon.
Always my pleasure, Todd. Thanks for having me.
All right. Stay with us. We're going to get a news update on WTIC.
Odyssey celebrates Mother's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Come on. Oh, come on. Why wait? You can rant right now at 860-751-4698 on the Todd Feinberg Show.
Good afternoon. It's WTIC. We've got the next hour for conversation. Then at 4:40, Joe Markley will be here. Wednesday being his day. 860-522-9842. And we've got Christine calling from Middletown. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Todd. Well, 9 days ago at the Legislative Office Building, I had a front row seat to hear Senator Sampson grill Secretary of State Stephanie Thomas about the voting issues. And Stephanie Thomas, she's really good at dancing around everything, admitting to saying we don't have a problem at some point. And can I expand on some of those Senate bills that Senator Sampson
Just pick one and take 90 seconds.
All right. Senate Joint Resolution 4, that's the amendment he talked about. That will allow kids to have minor-age kids to have gender-affirming care without parental knowledge and consent, as well as abortion services. So this is a driving a wedge and could hurt children. And this is what the Democrats are pushing.
All right. Well, thank you for bringing it up. The more we know about what they're up to, the better off we are. Thank you so much. And we got Juan in East Hartford. Hi, Juan.
Todd, this is a republic that is for the people, by the people. Okay,
so well, it used to starts, be. That's the premise.
Used
yes.
to be. But the idea of getting back to it has to start with elections. We've proven that there's no clean elections. Period.
Well, we've proven that there are dirty elections, and that's the thing to focus in on, because the answer from Democrats is always there's no such thing as a rigged election. There's no such thing as cheating. Whatever cheating takes place is negligible and doesn't affect outcomes. And we've got proof with Democrats suing Democrats in Bridgeport and showing videotapes of how they cheat that it does go on. It's obvious to anybody who wants to admit the obvious.
Absolutely. Taking the money out of elections, party affiliations, but there's no money. You declare everybody that gives you money is to you, directly to you, and you don't have to share. You don't have to give to a party. You get all that money out of elections and have everything grassroots. There might be a chance that we'll just clean all that garbage out of there. All those pork-hungry politicians that are, this is their career, this is their life. It's all about their power and the money. If they really wanted to have what we deserve, which is fair, clean elections, you get the money and then they have no incentive to cheat. They're actually working their job, doing their civic duty to represent the people that they like to represent.
I don't know how you get from here to there to fix our system. But
I start municipal way.
I don't.
If you're gonna run for
Wait, what do you mean municipal way? What's that mean?
You start right in a town. You take, you know, and it all grows. If it works, it just keeps growing.
So what would be the innovation? What would be the law you'd pass?
The candidate can only raise his own money. There's no money coming from the party. There's no fundraisers. If you want to run for office, you go sign up, and you stand in the soft box in the center of town. The town facilitates to get all that out. The town facilitates having a forum for everybody. So everybody can come and speak. These days, and the advertise, you want to see who's going to run for your office, is going to run your town. These are the times that you can come listen to their speech and their goals and what they want to do. And then you can make a decision. You can send literature throughout the town. But that's it. It's just that there's no fundraisers from outside money, no state senators coming to donate to you, no Republican Party given to you, no Democratic Party given to you. It's just clean. You get the money right on. There's no share funds. There's no state funds. There's no limit. All that garbage that they have, all those obstacles that they have for some people to be able to donate and somehow to get the money through the back door through PAC groups, that all has to go away.
Yeah, well,
it all has to start at the local level. Elected people who have no interest other than the people they're going to serve. Mm-hmm. And they have a predetermined agenda. They tell you this is what we're going to do. If you don't do it, they're going to throw you out the next election cycle.
Well, we've got to get back to that point where we're not so distracted by the left-right fight that we're willing to make rules that make sense. To, you know, we need a group of people who cover all spectrums of political beliefs, who agree that we need to fix the system and agree to the fixes. It's just hard when the system is controlled by people from the two political parties. Thank you, Juan, for the call. 860-522-9842. I like your ideas about that, because we do need something different. And as long as we're rooting for our team and we put the team ahead of the country or ahead of the state or ahead of our city or town, which is where we are now, as long as we're doing that, then we can't get our minds out of that contest that we have to beat the other side. I think that's the problem. I want to talk to you about a guy named Coleman Hughes. He's a podcaster. And he's 28 years old, young guy. He's a graduate of Columbia University. He's got a book out. He's a black guy, and he's really into talking about race and using his privilege as a black man to be able to talk about race issues and be unassailable in a way because he's coming from a point of view of personal experience regarding race. He's got a new book out called The End of Race Politics, Arguments for a Colorblind America. So he's pushing for the concept of people being colorblind. And in the world of political argument today, it's considered racist, I think, to say that we should be colorblind. That is to aspire to a society that doesn't consider race, because the movement in the anti-racism world is, the argument is that that's naive and racist to not be anti-racist the way they define it, which is to be to not accept the idea of colorblindness, that it's a fake idea. But Coleman Hughes is arguing that that's what we need to do, is not focus on it. Now, he was on The View today. It's just funny. It's funny to hear him on The View and hear how utterly freaked out they are. Not all of them. But Sonny Hostin, who is a former prosecutor, who's one of the hosts on The View, she's all bent out of shape that he's there. And she's been consulting, she says, with Martin Luther King's daughter. And clearly other people have made her their agent. Listen to some of what I went. Well, I want you to hear him first. And then she comes along a little later.
So my overall argument is that class, socioeconomics, is a better proxy for disadvantage. We all want to help the disadvantaged, and the question is, how do we identify them, right? The default right now in a lot of areas of policy is to use, you know, Black and Hispanic identity as a proxy for disadvantage. And my argument is that you actually get a better picture of who needs help by looking at socioeconomics and income. Mm-hmm. That picks out people in a more accurate way. Right?
So, all right, so the audience can cope with that, but, you know, not everybody can cope with that.
And
you hear how smart he is, though, and how logical, rational he is. And it was a beautiful thing to see him on The View today, because he so belonged on national television, in contrast to the show itself.
And
not my question, but when you say that socioeconomics picks out people in a better way than mm-hmm. race, mm-hmm. when you do look at the socioeconomics, you see the huge disparity between white households and Black households. You see the huge disparity between white households and Hispanic households. So your argument, and I've read your book twice because I wanted to give it a chance, mm-hmm. Your argument that race has no place in that equation is really fundamentally flawed.
It's fundamentally flawed, but she doesn't really have an argument against it. It's so funny. That's Sonny Hostin going after him.
There's two separate questions. One is whether each racial group is socioeconomically the same. That I agree with you. I agree with that fully.
And Sonny said, and the stats show that. And he says, yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, they're not. And the stats show that.
I agree with that fully. The question is, how do you address that in the way that actually targets poverty the best?
How do you fix poverty is the problem. It's got nothing to do with fixing race. It's got to do with fixing the problem that we have people who don't have the chance to perform in our society because they're held back by the political process. So there's a lot of people responsible for this, but it's a very interesting issue to de-racialize so that you take the emotion out of it and get rational like Coleman is. Let's talk about it more. After a quick break, 860-522-9842. This is WTIC.
Never miss a moment. Go listen to the Todd Feinberg podcast on the Odyssey app.
Okay. It's WTIC. We're talking about racism in America. I like the small issues. I do. Rant line number 860-751-4698. Dave's in Brantford. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, Todd, AA+ for Samson's work tonight. I wish, you know, in a one-party state, what he said doesn't go very far, but I want to add my 2 cents, and that there were some stories in the papers this year about these, not election workers, they're campaign workers, invading the nursing homes and the assisted living centers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about what you said, the supported communities of low-income housing, but especially the people with the ones who can't think too well for themselves. With campaign workers come in with live ballots, and then they get Stephanie Thomas to make a civil rights case that when the director of these living facilities want to turn you away for coming in and harassing their residents. You know, it's like letting in a vacuum cleaner salesman to say, I want to talk to the lady in room 212. And they say, why? What's it about? You know, and these people come in, they talk you into making a vote that you know nothing about. There's no chain of command that if you voted for the wrong person, that those campaign workers simply throw that ballot away because there's no record of you ever having voted and signed the sheet. And this is where a lot of the dirty is happening. And you've got Stephanie Thomas saying it's their civil right to vote. And you say, no, it's not the campaign worker's civil right to come into an assisted or a nursing home and badger a tenant and maybe give them, we knew somebody worked in New Haven, and they'd give you out like a little washcloth for your kitchen sink, you know, a hand towel mm-hmm. with the name of the candidate. So if you voted the right way, you would get a sippy cup. You know, those plastic cups with the straw in it, as a gift for voting the right way. This is quite frankly paying to get a ballot. That's a felony crime. And where's Stephanie Thomas looking into this? Even if you don't get enough of the obviously partisan one-party state legislators, but A++ for Samson's work today. He really hit the. Thanks for having him.
All right,
he's getting better and better.
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah, thank you, Dave.
Bye.
It is people's right to vote. It's also their right not to have their vote be stolen. And using glib comments that cover half of the issue isn't really very helpful. 860-522-9842. Another cut from Coleman Hughes, if you don't mind.
That fully. The question is, how do you address that in the way that actually targets poverty the best?
Great.
And what Martin Luther King wrote in his book, Why We Can't Wait, mm-hmm. is he called it, we need a Bill of Rights for the disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, we should address racial inequality. Yes, right. We should address the legacy of slavery. But the way to do that is on the basis of class. And that will disproportionately target blacks and Hispanics because they're disproportionately poor, but it will be doing so in a way that also helps the white poor, in a way that addresses poverty as the thing to be addressed.
That part is true, but as you are a student of Dr. King, I'm not only a student of...
Listen to this, Sonny Hostin on The View, going after Coleman Hughes for talking about an issue that he's studied and has great arguments on. And it's fine for her to debate him, but... There's a certain level of emotion and venom in her voice and a determination to prove him wrong instead of to interview him.
As you are a student of Dr. King, I'm not only a student of Dr. King, I know his daughter, Bernice.
Oh, right? She knows his daughter, Bernice. Is she proud of that, do you think? Do you think she's proud of that?
Right. Mm. So I'm going to get to my question.
Go ahead. Go right ahead.
The other women on The View were getting nervous because Sonny was making it so personal and bogging the interview down.
I think the premise is fundamentally flawed.
Fundamentally flawed, but she hasn't raised an argument yet. Here's
one. Colorblindness was the goal of the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. based upon Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, you know, content of character versus the color of skin. Bernice, Dr. King's daughter, points out that 4 years after giving that speech, Dr. King also said this: a society that has done something special against the Negro for hundreds of years must now do something special for Negroes. He also said in 1968, it was about less than a week before he was assassinated, this country never stops to realize that they owe a people kept in slavery for 244 years. So rather than class, he did write about that earlier on. Right before his death, he made the argument for racial equality and racial reparations. And so your argument for colorblindness, I think, is something that the right has co-opted. And so many in the black community, if I'm being honest with you, because
she wants to be honest. She's so interminable with her getting in his way and ruining the interview. And it's fascinating because Whoopi gets impatient with her and so does Joy Behar. And they're both big lefties, but she was just ruined. You know, she's breaking the format of the show, basically, and advocating and robbing the time away from the guest. The guest was awesome. Coleman Hughes. Anyway, I want you to hear more of him, which we'll do coming up. 860-522-9842. Also take phone calls to talk about other stuff. And we've got traffic and weather and news and information coming your way right now as we go to our top of the hour break. We're going to check in with the BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. Mark Christopher off today. Ian Stark is there.
Odyssey celebrates Mother's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.